אני שייך, הלב נמשך, אני בוחר להישאר, הכל כדאי, אני חי בארץ ישראל. This is my home, this is the place to be, מרגיש את אלוקיי גם בקרבי, אז תעלה אחי ושב איתי. This is my home, זה המקום.
You're listening to the Bring Them Home Aliyah podcast, hosted by Josh Wander.
Welcome back to the Bring Them Home podcast. This is Josh Wander from Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh. Today I have a very special guest. Her name is Karma Feinstein Cohen. Karma is the executive director of the World Magshime Chirut and World Chirut, which was founded in 1999. Since then, Ms. Feinstein-Cohen has worked tirelessly to advance the movement's goals both worldwide and in Israel. Long committed to the ideology of Zev Jabotinsky, she previously served in various leadership positions within Beitar for over 11 years. After serving as the educational director for Beitar Israel and as the regional coordinator for the settlement region, Ms. Feinstein-Cohen became head of the overseas department for World Beitar Executive and then Treasurer in 1994. Through the WZO, she headed up the Manof program run by the Department of Youth and Chalutz in the WZO and worked as a short-term shaliach in 1996 and 1997. She also operated as the co-chair for the Council of the World Zionist Youth Movements in 1998 to 2000. Ms. Feinstein-Cohen moved to Israel from New Jersey with her family when she was 11. After serving in the Israeli army, she received her BA in political economics from Tel Aviv University and is currently working on her master's degree in the same field. She now lives in Shaare Tikva with her husband and two children. Ms. Feinstein-Cohen is a member of the Presidium of the Zionist General Council of the WZO and has been a Jewish agency committee member since 2002. Since October 2016, she serves as a board member. Welcome, Karma. How are you today?
Thank God. Thank God. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. So let's go back. I want to talk about the World Zionist Organization. There are a lot of people out there, including myself until not so long ago, that are completely unfamiliar with the World Zionist Organization, its history, and what it does. Can you give us some background to what is the World Zionist Organization?
Well, first of all, of course, the World Zionist Organization was established by Theodore Herzl in 1897 in his deep quest to find a solution for, quote unquote, the Jewish problem. And, you know, after he wrote Judenstadt, the Jewish state, and the thought that there had to be a solution in the shape of a safe haven for the Jewish people. So it's from 1897, basically. And in the first, I believe, 20-some-odd years, if not more than that, it convened every year. But then after the state was established, that's more than 20-some-odd years. But anyway, after the state was established, then they started to spread it out a little bit. But the WZO at the time was the operative arm to push forward what Jabotinsky called the breakthrough period in order to establish the safe haven for the Jews.
And I understand that the WZO in June of 2004 created and adopted what is called the Jerusalem Program. And on that program, it speaks about... So it speaks about a number of things, including the unity of the Jewish people, its bond, and its historic homeland of Eretz Israel, and the centrality of the State of Israel in Jerusalem, its capital, in the life of the nation. It also speaks about Aliyah to Israel from all countries and the effective integration of all immigrants into Israeli society, the strengthening Israel as a Jewish, Zionist, and democratic state, and shaping it as an exemplary society with a unique moral and spiritual character marked by mutual respect for the multifaceted Jewish people rooted in the vision of the prophets, striving for peace and contributing to the betterment of the world, and ensuring the future and the distinctive inclusiveness of the Jewish people by furthering Jewish, Hebrew, and Zionist education, fostering spiritual and cultural values, and teaching Hebrew as the national language, nurturing mutual Jewish responsibility, defending the rights of the Jews as individuals and as a nation, representing the national Zionist interests of the Jewish people, and struggling against all manifestations of anti-Semitism, and finally settling the country as an expression of practical Zionism. That is a mouthful. But all I can say is that I don't see the difference between this Jerusalem program, and I'm a little bit curious because I know that there are a lot of different groups, and we're going to talk about what's going on right now as the Congress is meeting. There's a lot of different groups within the WZO, and some of them, at least from my minimal understanding of them, would have problems with a number of statements that are made here, but they all have adopted this program, correct?
Absolutely. In fact, this was a very tedious task to get this, you know, approved by everyone.
So tell us a little bit about how it's broken up. Who are the members of the WZO? How are they elected? And what is happening currently during the Congress that is meeting right now?
Okay, so the members of the WZO, they're basically two different types of members, but they're different tiers of membership. So on the same level, there are the world unions, which are basically political entities, not all political parties, by the way, because my organization, my movement, Chirut, is not a political party. So the world unions are the ideological spectrum or the rainbow of Zionist ideologies from Reform through today Haredi, from left to all the way right. So that would be the Britot, the world unions. With that, we have the organizations, which are an array of organizations ranging from the what they call the religious streams, but we as Americans would call it denominations. And then there are organizations such as Hadassah, Vito, Na'amat, Emuna Amit, and there's Maccabi and Bnei Brith and the Sephardi Center and et cetera, et cetera. So there are many, many organizations and movements that are part of the WZO, and they comprise the World Zionist Congress. It's right now it's 753 delegates that are here online, virtually in the Congress right now as we speak. In addition to that, there are what's called the Hagshama movements. Those are the young adult movements, 18 to 30-year-olds. There are 10 of those, and they somewhat represent the Zionist spectrum because there was a threshold to pass as far as membership. So basically, the last count of these movements that they did years ago, there had to be 5,000 members, registered members, and it was all, you know, very carefully checked and supervised. And that's basically the three major groups that form the World Zionist Organization.
Now, these groups don't always get along, and I understand that there's a lot of controversy right now during the Congress as it's meeting.
So, yeah, it's a two-sided answer to that question. First and foremost, we share the common denominator of being defined as Zionists. And that's unique in and of itself and uniting. So after the arguing, at the end of the day, we like to see ourselves as working together under the Zionist umbrella. Having said that, with that, we have the very severe differences, which right now have only become more problematic or more polarized because of new players that have come into the sandbox to play with us, and for no better way of putting it. And if it was, let's say, modern Orthodox through Reform and left to right, now we're talking about the Reform through Haredi, and we have is the Israeli right, what would be all the way through to J Street. So J Street itself is not a member, but it ran on a slate together with the Hatikva, on the Hatikva slate, which was Amenu, the Israeli Labor Party, Meretz, and J Street, and other such American organizations. So it's a very diverse group. Most of the time in between Congresses, once things have been settled and budgets and such have been divided, then we're able to get along and more or less work together. But just like in any, you know, organization, there's organizational politics. And that means, you know, that there's always negotiating this way or that way. But in general, you know, that's not any different than any organization. The big deal happens in the year and a half before Congress, when, you know, the power will be divided between the 753 delegates and mainly in the 525, which are now 521, if it's of interest to anyone, because four delegates were disqualified.
So I always tell people that, and this confuses a lot of people, because a lot of people refer to themselves as Zionists. And many, right. There are many different definitions of what a Zionist is. That's why I was fascinated by this Jerusalem program. I always tell people that every U.S. president has always said that they are pro-Israel. Of course, right. Clinton and Carter and Obama had a very different definition of what pro-Israel is than, let's say, Ronald Reagan or Donald Trump. Yeah. So, you know, it's easy to say that. And I'm reminded of a quick anecdote over here. I was speaking to a group of college students, American college students here. And before the talk, I went over to two boys that were standing in the corner, and I introduced myself, and I said, what are your names? So one said that their name is Ilan, and the other said that their name is Asher. And I said, I was a little bit taken aback. I said, those are incredible names. I was used to hearing names like Chris and I don't know what, you know, I wasn't used to hearing Israeli names from American college students. I was uh-huh. I said, where did you get those beautiful names from? So they said, you know, our parents are diehard Zionists. So I said, that's beautiful. I said, so when are your parents moving here?
Right.
And they looked at me a little bit strange, and then they sort of uncomfortably laughed. And then they said, well, they don't have any plans on moving here. So I said, well, I guess we have very different definitions of what Zionist or Zionism is. For me, it's the movement of trying to get the Jewish people back to the land of Israel.
Right.
Some people, I guess, see it differently. So what is your take on what the definition amongst these different groups are in the WZO of Zionism and the movement?
Well, first and foremost, we define Zionism as the civil rights movement of the Jewish people and the Jewish people's right to self-determination in the land of Israel. That's what Zionism is for us. Having said that, going to diaspora Jewry, Zionism is a very large spectrum, ranging from people who support Zionism and are very active in helping Israel all the way to making Aliyah. And this is not an original quote for me, but I adopted it because I thought it was absolutely true as far as my movement is concerned, is that we treat our activists and our members as people who have not made Aliyah yet. So it's always out there. It's the top goal of all of our activity. We aspire to reach a point where we have to rebuild our leadership in diaspora, because they've all made Aliyah. With that being said, we know that that's not necessarily the situation. And I think today there's a more, I don't know if it's a modern approach, but a lot of people take citizenship and go back and forth, and they can't leave their businesses. And many will tell you, especially Americans, that life is financially easier in the United States. They want to be supportive of Israel. So they come and they spend 5, 6, 3 months a year in Israel, or go back and forth for business purposes. The world is changing, and there's far less labeling of people that, you know, that do that. As long as their heart and their Jewish activism is Zionist oriented, I prefer that certainly to the term pro-Israel. I don't particularly like groups that consider themselves pro-Israel. I think that's a watered-down version of everything. I'd rather somebody tell me I'm a Zionist in the United States, and I'll be an unapologetic Zionist, but I can't make Aliyah yet, or I won't. And we always tell them yet, because they have to know that as far as Chirut is concerned, Aliyah is the top goal.
So I'm a little bit curious, because you have groups in the WZO, and I can't say that it's only in the WZO, because right. even in the Israeli Knesset, we have such diversity as well. But there are groups that are outside of their official capacities in these organizations or in the Knesset. They would never define themselves as Zionists, whether it be J Street or the Haredim. So what happens all of a sudden when they become delegates that they become Zionists?
Well, that's a constitutional matter in the WZO. The Jerusalem program is the manifest of the WZO. So if a political party in Israel or a grouping in the United States signs the Jerusalem program, that is their declaration of supporting Zionism. That's defined by the constitution of the WZO. So all it takes is a signature on the Jerusalem program, and that's that.
Okay. So let's talk about money, because we're running out of time here. There's a lot of money involved here.
Right.
And there these organizations have there are organizations that have historically been in charge of the money and been in charge of the key leadership positions of the number of the organizations you mentioned earlier. And that mm-hmm. is changing. Can you tell us a little bit what's happening now?
Most people don't really know what's going on in the WZO, and there have been very savvy Israeli members of Knesset that have said, I know the Knesset, you know, back to front. I know how to work every system here. I have still been able to crack the system in the WZO. So that's just a little bit about how complicated that is. But basically regarding funding or what happened in the past, there's been a tradition of forming a wall-to-wall coalition. So that means that really nobody was left out. And it was determined by the size of the faction. The funding was determined by the size of the faction. So if you had a lot of delegates from all over the world, that would basically define how much money you would be getting from the budgets of the WZO, the Keren Kayemet, et cetera. And the smaller you were, the less money you received. So now there's been a shift in that.
Hello. I think that we've have some technical problems here. Let me try to fix that. So let me try to call her back, because we seem to have lost Karma. And as we call her back, we will get right back on, because we're completing this segment shortly. And let's see if we can call her back now and get her online. And we will continue this discussion. Hi, Karma.
I have no clue what
happened. I think we lost you there. Sorry.
Yes. No. I'm not moving. Okay. So where were we?
You were talking about the budget and the key players and how they were delegated according to the size of their delegations, I guess.
Correct. So now that there were elections in the United States, and Israel had three elections, but the last one counts. That determines the number of delegates from Israel and the United States, and that has a dollar sign at the end of it. So the delegates make a very, very big difference. And the reform movement lost about a third of their support in the last elections, and new players came into the sandbox. And the Haredi group Eretz HaKodesh ran for the first time. Mizrahi had a beautiful showing in the elections in the United States. ZOA grew a little bit. Amenu, that brought in J Street, had two or three additional delegates as a result of the election. So there's a little bit of a shift. The big shift is in the Likud, and that's as a result of the work that they did in diaspora, and mainly the number of Knesset members, because that's the key to the delegates in Israel. So when you have a Likud, a very, very strong Likud, that takes in Orly Levy, and the Israeli delegation in and of itself is almost 80, then the rest is easy for them. Whatever they get in diaspora, they get in diaspora. So they're the largest delegation with 118, I believe. The second delegation is our delegation, which is it's a joint faction, Mizrahi, Herut, Israel Betenu, Lavi, and Yamina, Ichud Lumi. So the national camp has a beautiful showing. You know, no matter how you put it, it's a matter of numbers at the end of the day.
And there's been some pushback from the other side. I understand yesterday there was a big vote, and that was tabled, or it was pushed off because of they weren't happy with the numbers.
There was an agreement. The whole business is a coalition agreement. Everything at the end of the day boils down to the coalition agreements, and it was supposed to be passed on Tuesday, on the first day of the Congress. And the agreement that was signed was basically signed in the beginning by the national camp. I don't like calling it the right way. I like calling it the national camp. And then the rest sort of came and said, well, we're not in this and we're not getting enough. And this is a takeover. It's a hostile takeover. We disapprove. And it went back on the table. And as we speak,
well, what
right
is
now,
what do they mean by a hostile takeover? There were Democratic elections that right. Are they contesting the elections?
No, they're not contesting the elections. They're contesting the division of the spoils, because the division of the spoils were not really done numerically, but the signatures were numeric. So theoretically, they said that in order for them to come on board, they would want to be given more, be it the Reform, Conservative, Yesh Atid, Kahol Levan, Blue and White, Labor. So they put it back on the table and they forced more departments to be open. But as it was, in order to bring the national camp to an agreement, many more departments have been added in order to be able to fill the needs of the different groups. Now, this in and of itself is not terrible, because I aspire to see the WZO growing. And I think it's not a bad thing if there's real activity, if we really are motivated and we come out with a lot of activity, then I think it's a win-win situation. And one cannot ignore Democratic election results. So it was tabled. You're absolutely right. But more than that, we have the organizations which don't hold elections, but they do vote for the coalition agreements. And they often do not intervene. But when they see that there's an agreement that's not a wall-to-wall agreement, they then will say, stop, sit down, rethink this. And this is exactly what they did this time. They said, this is not a fair division. We need to sit down again and rethink the process. And when we get to something where everyone is happy, then we'll all sign together and it will be the famous wall-to-wall WZO agreement.
Well, why is it? Do you have any idea why there has been such a shift? Was it because of a demographic difference in Jews in America, or was it more because of a lack of interest in certain groups that they didn't come out to vote?
I think it was a backlash. I think the United States, Israel is Israel, we more or less know what's going on there, but in the United States, the fact that, I don't like the term progressive and liberal, because I consider myself to be a progressive and a liberal, and I'm, again, labeled a right-winger. I'm a member of the national camp, live in Samaria, and vote right-wing in Israel. But they defer, you know, they call themselves, refer to themselves as progressive and liberal. But I feel that they pushed a little bit, you know, too hard in the United States. And the feeling there that the lack of support for Israel during the Trump administration and the attempt of J Street to lobby what we saw as against Israel. Because if a Jewish American lobby group demands that the American government sanction Israel, I have a problem with that. And so do a lot of other Jews. And the Reform movement, with what they were basically teaching in their communities, and the growth of the Reform movement, I guess, created a very large motivation in the Haredi, Orthodox, and right-wing camp in America. And people decided, no, it was time to do something. Eretz HaKodesh ran for the first time. And as a Haredi Zionist group, they did fantastically. They got 25 seats. I can tell you that as the executive director of a, I would call it the fastest growing movement in the United States, but it's still not a party movement. We quadrupled our votes in the last election. So, you know, there people are looking to find a solution for this not-so-pro-Israel rhetoric, counter-Zionist rhetoric. I think counter-Zionist is the best thing, because I wouldn't, God forbid, say that they were anti-Zionist. They're all under the Zionist umbrella, but what they're doing, I believe, is counter-Zionist. And it's very, very unfortunate, because they went full force and said things, and it's unfortunate that we can't reach another higher level of unity, but that's the situation, and maybe it's for the better, because the national camp had a beautiful showing, and in the elections here and in the United States and across the globe, and here we are with over 50% of the delegates belonging to the national camp. And I think that's a very, very big deal. It says a lot.
Amazing. We have to wrap this up.
Sure.
I just want to get, since this is an Aliyah show, I want to just focus my last question on Aliyah. And it was part of the Jerusalem program, and you mentioned that you have adopted the idea that those that are not yet here still have a chance to come. What is the WZO's role in educating and trying to get more people to come back home?
One of the beautiful things that happened since in 2010, the Jewish Agency decided to split ways with the WZO as far as partnership and budget and departments, was that we were able to establish ourselves and to build new budgets in the WZO. And the Department of Aliyah Promotion was established in 2015. And ever since then, we don't deal with the Aliyah and the Klita. There's a fantastic department of the Jewish Agency, and there's a total division there of responsibilities. But we deal with promoting Aliyah. The WZO deals with promoting Aliyah, be it in Hebrew Ulpanim and the Hagshama movements, which are funded. It's a young adult, you know, department that deals with promoting Aliyah. So the WZO is heavily, heavily invested financially, manpower, and, you know, ideologically in encouraging Aliyah and making it possible for people to get to know as much as they possibly can before they go to the Jewish Agency process. So we're very, very heavily invested and hope to be more so in the next term, because that's what it's all about. You know, the repatriation of our brethren. I can tell you that our movement, that Chirut has been involved with the communities, Jewish communities in Uganda, as crazy as that may seem, Chirut specifically is involved with those who went through a halachic conversions with Rav Rifkin. And we've been working with them ideologically and trying to help them. The Israeli government is a little bit more difficult with the issues of these conversions. But we feel that it's very important to reach out to Jews of all shapes, sizes, hues, ethnic backgrounds, and bring them home. So that's our raison d'être. That's the purpose for which we exist. And the WZO is the exact same way and very supportive of this.
Amazing. So we look forward to working with you hand in hand, and we'd love to have you. This is obviously a very complex topic, and we'd love to have you on again to discuss these matters, especially after the conference is over and we have more of an idea of how everything played out. Thank you so much for joining us today, Karma. And like I said, we look forward to hearing from you in the future.
Thank you so much for having me. Hatzlacha.
Take care.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Bring Them Home Aliyah podcast. If you identify with our message, please subscribe and tell your friends about us too. You can leave us a review on iTunes, as that really helps us grow. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. For sponsorship opportunities and for all other inquiries, please email us at bringthemhomeisrael@gmail.com. Check out our website at www.israeltorah.org for more content on this vital topic. This is the place to be.